What are some of the primary challenges that you see with the men that you work with on a daily basis?
Sometimes we have to just step back and look at what do we really value the most in life. And I think guys can really deceive themselves. I think they'll say, Jesus, others, you know, joy, that's the whole thing. Show me your checkbook. Show me your social media accounts. Show me your five closest friends, last five books you've read, and your calendar, and I'll know you. And if people tell you what they really think and what they're living, those two things a lot of times don't line up.
Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And today we're excited to have a guest in the studio. Jeff Pinkleton is somebody that I just recently was able to meet through the podcasting world, which is kind of a cool way to meet people. And having a conversation with him, I immediately thought this is a man who has some perspective, has some insight, and has some wisdom that it'd be fun to share with our audience. And so this is kind of a double pleasure. It was fun to talk to Jeff again and to learn from him and to hear the things that he's doing. And of course, it's also fun to be able to do that in such a way that we can share with all of you. David, this is the first time you got to meet Jeff, so you got a kind of first-hand experience here today.
Yeah, it was, and I really didn't know what to expect going into this conversation, but I think I was really pleasantly surprised. He ends up touching on a topic that I think is really important and really needed, and something that we talk about a lot in Unbound, which is community and vulnerability. And so I think that this conversation is very worth listening to.
This is a conversation that everybody should listen to. Jeff has specifically worked, has done a lot of work with a men's ministry. But so, you know, if you're a guy, this will make sense to you. But if you're not, I might encourage you to listen even more, because there's some insight here and there's some understanding here that Jeff, some remarks that Jeff makes that is helpful to understand men, some of the struggles that they go through, and some of the ways that people can be helped in those struggles. And particularly, we spend some time talking about discouragement, which is not, you know, exclusive to men, but it is a universal thing that a lot of us deal with. And the things that Jeff has witnessed and observed in terms of how to deal with that and how to help people with that, it's going to be useful for anybody to hear. So I hope you enjoy our conversation with Jeff. Jeff, welcome to the Be Unbound podcast. We had this conversation a little bit earlier, you and I met because of podcast connections. And as far as I'm concerned, one of the coolest things about having a podcast is I get to meet people I wouldn't have otherwise met. And you fall into that category. We had a really fun conversation the other day, and I'm looking forward to asking you about some of the projects that you're doing. But I just, in our kind of brief time that we've known each other, I've also enjoyed sharing some stories and, frankly, knowing some things to pray for you about, and vice versa, as we both have been through a bit of some rough times recently, and it's been good to share that with somebody else and get some outside perspective. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you, Jonathan, and David, a new friend who will hopefully make me sound. And if you can do anything about making me look better, I'll take that too.
That's what we have him here for, honestly, Jeff. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, David making me look and sound better is about what we're paying him for. Right, David?
We do what we can here.
There you go.
How's that for a non-committal reply? So, well, Jeff, you have an interesting background in a lot of different ways. And what I gathered from talking to you before is that, you know, the common thread through that is that you've worked with people in a variety of different settings. So I want to ask you about one of those here in a second. But before I do that, just give us a little bit of your background for the listeners here, where you've come from and the kinds of things that you've done in the last couple of years.
Last couple of years?
Well, as long as you think, as far back as you think is interesting. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a wrong question to ask me. I'll go all kinds of places then. We'll be done in 30 minutes and I will have had one sound bite. But yeah, real quick, just came to Jesus when I was young, 11-ish years old. He was kind of the guy to get me out of hell. And he looked cute on a, what do you call it? The Velcro board with sheep and kids.
Yeah, flannel graph. Yeah.
And said, hey, I'm in for that. Get me baptized. And then when I was about 19 or 20, I think I was 20 at the time, really sold out to Jesus, never looking back, through Young Life, at a Young Life camp experience up in Glenspey, New York at Lake Champion, and have really never looked back. And then God kind of pieced together, I was a long time volunteer with Young Life, but pieced together a bunch of random jobs, newspaper writer, banker, college recruiter for a university that's no longer in existence, like a lot of small schools, and just, you know, some other stuff. And for about 7 years, I was really fighting this battle with the Lord to go into full-time ministry. And I tell people I was a killer, great volunteer. But there's a big difference between being a great volunteer and being a great paid staff guy. So I think it was in February of 97, our Young Life area director and I were at a retreat with some others. And he basically kept me in the cabin one day and really challenged me that he said, he asked a great question. He said, "Jeff, if all things were equal, you make the same amount of money, what would you do with your life?" And I said, "Well, that's an easy answer. I'd go love kids like I'm doing them now and go do ministry like Young Life with kids." And as soon as I said it, I'm like, "Oh crap, that just said that's what I'm supposed to be doing." And it kind of opened up the door, and I went through a process of about 11 months. And then a really cool thing was developing through multiple churches, parachurch ministries, reaching urban kids in Springfield, Ohio. And so jumped in, rest is kind of history, did that for 10 years, met my wife along the way. She was a teacher at the school where I was focused on, didn't know the Lord through our ministry, through her getting to know me, through me inviting her to church, which had not been something I had done. I was not a like church evangelist guy. I'd share Jesus with people. Did some of that, but she went to church with me, saw a woman who we're good friends with now, who had some joy in her that she hadn't seen elsewhere. She came to Christ. She started working, pouring into some girls. And then back in 2006 and 7, God was kind of moving me into, we had a real need in our city, Springfield, Ohio. Google it. There's plenty to see and find out, national news and whatever, that there was a real need for somebody to really pour into men, particularly as we head generationally down, younger men. We've had a lot of good philanthropy and people giving, particularly to ministry. There's a lot of ministry for a town our size, but who are the people that were going to replace the older people who've been doing that for years? And through that process, four of us met regularly, me and another ministry guy, two business leaders. And the other ministry leader was like me. We're ministry leaders. We're doing what we do. We called to it, love it. We're not going anywhere. One business leader was older and he was heading towards retirement. One guy was young and he clearly was doing great what he was doing with mortgages. And then along that path, God said to me, like, "Don't think it's not you." And I'm like, "It's not me." And he's like, "Well, I can replace you." And I'm like, "No, you can't." And he's like, "I can replace you." And I'm like, "No, you can't." Third time, I'm like, "Well, maybe he could replace him. I mean, he's God. I guess he could replace me." And then in 2008, we launched Full On Out after a long cool story process of doing this thing called The Gathering, connecting men to God. And we've been doing it for next year will be year 20. People were debating, was this a full-time or part-time thing? It's been full-time every step along the way. 9 months, several years in, I got paid less than my full-time pay, but then they caught me up and I just deposited some checks today. And we're 5 months ahead, I think right now, which for a parachurch world is pretty decent. And I've been the biggest beneficiary of what I do is we connect men to God through a variety of outlets. Nobody receives more than I do.
Well, that's the gathering was one thing that, you know, we talked and we covered a lot of ground last time. And I actually want to juxtapose this a little bit. So I just came back from a men's retreat a weekend or so ago. And this is a really special retreat that I go on with some really, really dear brothers that I see. Generally, most of them I see just once a year. I get a lot of prayer requests from them and have them pray for me a lot throughout the year. And so there's a connection. But then there's this one intense time of the year that we spend some time together. But one of the things that almost always comes out there is that there is a level of discouragement that is discouraging. And there is a kind of a statement that this is the one place that I can go where I can express that and be encouraged. Now, I think both of those things are really interesting. And now take that one step further. Recently, at one of our live events that we did for our students, I had one of the volunteer staff members was there come to me. He said, "I want to ask you some questions." And he says, "The premise is," he said, "I looked around and I talked to," and he named some other folks that are in our program or have been alumni of our program. He says, "We came to the realization that none of our fathers have any friends." And so think about, you know, these are folks probably David's age, maybe 5 or 6 years older. So none of the fathers, which, you know, Jeff is probably close to you and I's age, have any friends. And he says, and we're really working on how to avoid that. I thought those two things, you know, they came two weekends back to back for me, were really striking. A level of kind of consistent discouragement among a group of men that say, I don't have anybody else to share this discouragement with and become encouraged. And a set of young people who said, boy, I'm looking at my dad. And they, you know, good relationships with their dad, no like major wounds there. And saying, I'm observing that my dad doesn't have any friends and I want to do something different. I just want, you know, just reflecting that a little bit, because I thought that was striking to me. And then in the middle of that, I talked to you and found out about the gathering, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, back in the day, we used the line, and I've heard this changed a little bit here and there, but I can't imagine it's gotten better that 1 in 10 men have a friend, not like a coworker, not the golf buddy, but someone that, like, when rubber meets the road and life is as hard gets, don't be there at any time. I think I told you, Jonathan, before, we use a line, 2 a.m. friend got one, kind of like the milk carton thing. And, you know, if we're honest, most people don't. In fact, I've just said to some people recently with some of the stuff I've been dealing with on a personal level that it looks like I've got it better than probably anybody. And in many ways I do. But like there was a night last week, my wife was out. I think my daughter was, my daughter had a play. And from like 6:30 till whenever I fell asleep, I mean, I dozed at one point, but like 11:30 before my wife and daughter got home, there were times I really wanted to talk to somebody, but I'm like, you know, it's a Friday night and people are busy and who do I call? So even for me, that can be a challenge at times. And you know, they say, what's the greatest crisis facing our country? Isolation, particularly with men. The thing I always say to people is you go to a McDonald's or places where people have Panera or those type of places, maybe even the little mom pop dive and diner early on a weekday morning, what do you almost always see? A bunch of older men who retired, who get together Monday through Friday, typically, or maybe once a week, but usually it's a lot of times it's 5 days a week. They're drinking coffee. They're talking about the events. Today, they would have been, the timing of this taping, they would have been talking about the State of the Union or what happened in the Olympics or what happened for the Super Bowl, or maybe they were talking about Bad Bunny. Who knows? But, you know, we're talking about things. And I've wanted to write a book about that called Golden Age Wisdom from the Golden Arches, or something to that effect, because I think with most of those guys, they're the type of guys who would tell you, I never did this back when I worked. I was too busy. I was trying to provide. You know, people will say that the Tom Brokaw called, like my dad's age, the greatest generation. That industrial revolution that hit them really kind of took them out of anything like that. And so, yeah, most men, they worked really hard. They work hard. They come home. They eat dinner. They catch in with the family. They sit in their favorite chair. And then they doze off for a bit, watch the news, and that's kind of their night. So, yeah, we got to do what we can. And I think the younger generations, Gen X, or Gen Z, Alpha, they seem to want that. I'm going to a worship thing tonight. I'm too old, but it's for 18 to 29-year-olds, young adults. And my son's playing worship, so I said, well, if my son goes, I get a pass. And you'll see it. I mean, there's relationships happening, I think, amongst the younger generation, which is great hope for us. But, yeah, if you're 35 or 40 and over, it's not coming easily. You have to want it. But I speak in our world a lot with the gathering that two things make all the difference in your life. Opening your Bible, being committed to God's word, and having a group of people you are doing life with, no doubt about it. And I use the story of Mark 2 a lot, of the healing of the paralytic. You know, in my old Young Life days, youth ministry days, we're taking taking people to Jesus. Sometimes, like what I'm feeling right now, I got to find the four who are taking me to Jesus. So we got to have those people in our lives at all costs.
So first of all, let's just back up a little bit and tell us what the gathering is. So, cause I want to ask you some questions to follow up on that, but let's build the context here. So, tell us about the gathering. You sort of said how it came about, but what is it exactly?
Yeah. So we're the bread and butter of what we do is we have about shy of 24 small groups of men that meet on a regular basis from basically South Dayton, Ohio, to north of Springfield, Bell Fountain, kind of that area, which would mean a lot to people listening who don't know Ohio. And then we go past Dayton west a little bit, and then to shy of London, Ohio. So it's considered the Miami Valley. And we have, you know, typically 6 to 12 guys in a group. Our smallest group for years is now our biggest group with about 37 guys. They meet weekly. Most of them meet biweekly. And those guys up in the Bell Fountain area, furthest north away you can be from us, are just hungry and they get after it and they've been faithful. So, you know, a mentor of mine, Bill Brown, he says that most guys sitting around a table talking about life, it never happens. So there's just something, nothing's new under the sun. We do that, typically meet every 2 weeks, hour, 15 minutes or so, 9 times out of 10 at a public place, because we want people to see this is a possibility. The woman who wants to encourage her husband or her dad or son or whatever, and men saying, hey, what are these guys doing? Then twice a year, we do a big breakfast outreach event. I don't know when this gets when this gets released, but April 9th, we're having David Tyree, Super Bowl champion, New York Giant, Mr. Helmet Catch. He's coming to share the gospel, share his story. We do that twice a year. And then we do about 8 to 10 retreats every year. I'm bringing in to our world the old kind of Young Life youth ministry philosophy. You get me away with guys for 3-4 days to a week, that's worth 6 to 12 months back home, doing life, seeing a guy come downstairs, looking all disheveled, saying, dude, you need some coffee like nobody's business, and all the fun stuff where you poke at each other and have late night laughs and watching Nate Bargatze comedy special and cut up and hike and all that kind of stuff. We do the podcast. And then it's just a lot of just how do we do life together? Going to comedy shows, going to sporting events, having, you know, board game or card nights or whatever, sitting around bonfires, anything and everything that makes men want to come together. And some of our biggest fans and champions are women. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, the retreat that I went to 2 weeks ago, several guys said, you know, my wife is like, what, when is that retreat? When's it coming up? Don't miss that. Make sure you buy your tickets. In other words, the wives are encouraging them to go. So when
it's either extreme. Women are either very for it. And I can tell you some rough stories where a woman's like, I can't be a part of that. You're not going to be involved. And I'm like, whoa, if that doesn't look like a marriage, it's heading into trouble. But the women who support, I'll tell you what, you've probably seen it. Those are going to be some of the healthiest marriages going. And I protect Sunday nights for my wife so she can do her thing. Every Sunday night for probably 15 years, she meets with a group of women. It's somewhere usually between 2 to 4 every Sunday night, almost without, and I'll miss once in a blue moon, but they're together almost every Sunday night.
So when your groups are meeting on their weekly or biweekly meetings, is this like in the morning, in the evening, afternoon? What typically happens?
75% are in the morning, Chick-fil-A, Panera, Bible study, book study. We have one that's virtual. A neat thing we're doing, this is since we even talked, Jonathan, I've reached out to a few of the guys, well, one particularly, but a couple in the loop that have been a part of the podcast. And, you know, we've had enough of a connection. It's like, what if we did something together virtually? Because even some of those guys, as great as they are, as much as they love Jesus, do they have something on a regular basis? And they seem to trust me to whatever extent. So, hour and 15 minutes, digging into the Word. And you know, if there's something going on, if there's something we're sharing that kicks that aside, the whole point's to be together and grow together in Christ. A book, a Bible study. We use the SOAP method of study quite a bit, which you're probably familiar with: scripture, observation, application, and prayer. But that shouldn't be the priority over, hey, this guy really needs something or that guy needs something. As long as that doesn't become an every week, you know, one guy's always got the same need over and over, and it's about his cousin's girlfriend's cat. That's under the John Christ. Hey, do we need to pray about that?
Yeah, that was oddly specific too. So,
traditional education doesn't work for everyone. If you or your student wants something different, check out Ascend by Unbound. With flexible courses, real-world projects, mentorship, and community, Ascend equips young adults to thrive academically, professionally, and personally. Students consistently say that the close-knit support and resume-ready experience are their favorite parts. Enrollment prices rise soon, so don't wait. Find your track at beunbound.us/ascend. Is this something that you guys pretty much just like distribute through churches, or is this something that just kind of is an outreach that just kind of spreads through just men generally in the community? How does
good question, David. It's more, I would say, business. Like anything else, we're very careful when we started that line connecting men to men and men to God. Some people can hear that and think, shouldn't that be flipped around? You go to God for... No, guys get connected through other men. So we sometimes will tell those stories. Like I posted it on Facebook a couple weeks ago. How did you get connected? Of course, a lot of people are going to say me because I'm very relational and I'm the executive director. But I love the stories where like here's a guy and 10 guys that are really key involved because of him. And but I would say business... just the community in general, church world, workplace, But probably the business broader, who are people that care about the community and are involved, serving on boards, serving on school boards, going to the networky type of lunches. That's probably the easiest, best way.
So you've been doing this for a while. As you look back, what's been the thing that's been most surprising to you? As you know, obviously you've had, you know, you said 20 years and some significant growth in that time period. What is, as you know, that's a pretty decent time to observe and see and watch some changes. What surprised you the most?
I just think that we've lasted. I mean, because there was a lot of joking or concern, like, can this thing even last? Like, isn't this part-time? And we did something for years called Men in the Marketplace, and it kind of predated me. And it felt like a good old boy club, and they had lunch every Thursday. And it was a little, I was young, but I was drawn to it because I always wanted something with men based on, you know, where my dad was involved in the church world. And when we did men's stuff at our church when I was a kid, I enjoyed it and liked it and wanted more when I grew into manhood. But I think God's favor, I mean, I told you separately, Jonathan, I think just the people we've gotten access to, somebody spoke into my life months before we started, and they said, Jeff, you're going to have to really steward well what I think God's going to give you, because he's going to give you access to some things that are way beyond you, that you're going to have to honor him and hold those things carefully, that you don't get stupid with it. I don't know if he thought I could get stupid with it. I probably could have, but you know, like even the way you and I connected. I mean, I think we felt a kindred brotherhood type of thing. And it's like, you know, sometimes someone finds me, I find them. Someone says, hey, you need to meet so-and-so. And you know, one of the beautiful things, and I know there's not many comparatively to what was negative, but with COVID, I think when we saw possibilities and opportunities versus problems and obstacles, man, people realized what you can do through a screen. That's, it's not the best way to go. I'd rather have lunch with you guys right now or meet in a coffee shop, but hey, we kind of need to do this. There is a lot you can do, and God just given us great favor. And then the people that have gotten connected, I sometimes will get discouraged by certain people who don't get connected, but I'm doing all I can to stay on top of all the guys that are connected. We've probably got 250 to 300 guys regularly, week in, week out involved. And if you guys met them, you'd be like, holy cow, those guys, Jeff's got rock stars around him. We thought he had some issues and he's not that sharp a dude. Now we see, because look at the guys around him. I mean, it's just true.
Yeah.
A lot of people are outside amening right now. I don't know if you guys can hear it. I hear the amen.
What are some of the challenges you've seen? So I think what is interesting to me is that a 20-year stretch of working pretty exclusively with men in these types of groups, you know, I think there's just such a, I see this from having worked with young people, you know, as I tell people, you know, if you're a mechanic, then what you get is you get 8 hours a day to learn how to fix cars. And so you're going to be better at than anybody else. And for me, I get 8 hours a day to see young people and to watch them transition from young adults to full adults. And so it gives you an interesting insight into some of the things that are going on in the culture and some of the things that are, you know, and year to year, there's some of the same pathologies and some of the same opportunities, but there's often some unique twists to that, depending on the time and the place and some cultural forces. Well, what are some of the primary challenges that you see with the men that you work with on a daily basis?
You know, it's like anything else. I was interviewing a guy on our podcast yesterday, and we were talking about minimalism and talking about sometimes we have to just step back and look at what do we really value the most in life. And I think guys can really deceive themselves. I think they'll say, Jesus, others, you know, joy, that's the whole thing, you. And, you know, again, show me your checkbook. Show me your social media accounts. Show me your five closest friends, last five books you've read in your calendar, and I'll know you. And if people tell you what they really think and what they're living, those two things a lot of times don't line up. And we sell out for the American dream. You know, there was that documentary out several years ago. I forgot who put it out exactly, called The American Gospel. And it was very interesting. And then there was the follow-up one. But we've kind of fallen into this American gospel thing, whether it's politics or American dream. And it's just not biblical. And I think guys, and I'm not talking about like big ethical stuff necessarily, but they'll compromise. They'll, you know, find every reason to be doing this or doing that, money at the expense of family, family at the expense of their faith. And then, they, you know, it's the old Francis Chan rope thing. They try to, you know, fit Jesus into an hour on a Sunday, maybe. And I mean, give your wife an hour a week. What's that going to happen? It's not going to happen. And I think the other, the biggest struggle I face, let me rephrase the question a little bit. The biggest struggle I face day in and day out, week in and week out, is the number of guys I see through my network, because people come to me because they know my network, and what I could do to help them out, discipleship. I tell people all the time, it's like I did in Young Life. Like, if you're coming only because there's good looking high school girls at a Young Life club, I don't care. That's why I went to camp the first time. I heard there were good looking girls there. I got radically, recommitted my life to Jesus, and everything's changed since. But if you could trust what we're bringing to the table, the people, the network, what God's going to do, we can set you on a path without trying to play God, just know what he'll do and where he'll meet you. That'll change your life. But, you know, people say, oh, yeah, okay, you never hear from them again. It takes 6 months. It takes them falling on their face. It takes whatever. Versus, because when we've seen guys do that, get together with me, their world's falling apart professionally, marriage, whatever, and then they trust us and they jump in, it's a game changer all over. Again, and it's not about us. It's not about the gathering. It's connecting men to men and men to God and just knowing the good and the kind that God has for men. But to get them to get beyond a one-time meeting and tell you what they really need and how they're broken, or how they know their wife wants them to do this or that or this, and then they don't do it, it happens all the time. But the guys that jump in and trust God and say, I'll go, and I'll tell people flat out, do you trust that I've got your best in mind and we can lay out something for you? If they say yes, I say, let's go, but I'm going to hold you to it. And then at some point, you got to cut bait and say, well, they're just not coming. Did that answer the question, Jonathan?
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, you say there's nothing new under the sun. And so people struggle with, you know, who they are, their relationship with Christ, all those kinds of things, figuring out and putting that in context. And yet each age and each time brings with it particular stresses and particular pathologies that sometimes are the big challenge. I think maybe this hits a little closer to home, but, you know, having observed that and having witnessed that, and, you know, what I said earlier, we have these, this theme of these guys that I meet with who are almost all leaders far surpassing my own capabilities. This one retreat that I go to, and then just this theme of discouragement that runs through that. And then, you know, say, I come here to be encouraged. I think that is a pretty big universal right now. There's an isolation. And I think when there's an isolation, then one of the fruits, the bitter fruits of isolation, is discouragement. And so I wonder if you could speak to that. And I know, you know, you're also going through a season of discouragement at the moment, so it's a little bit like raw in terms of the moment that you're in. What are some of the things you've observed for somebody who's listening to this saying, yeah, that's me, I'm discouraged, and I feel like there's almost no way that I can really express this, or maybe I don't have the freedom to say I'm discouraged because I've got to be the strong one or something like that. What does that look like? How do you address those things when it comes up in your groups or when you're dealing with those challenges with men?
Well, let me give you a story from my past. So when I was doing youth ministry and going through some Young Life training stuff, me and a guy who's a key mentor in my life, we actually went to a basketball game together Saturday. We would drive back from Zanesville, Ohio, back to Springfield. It's been an hour and 45 minutes. And we'd get in a car. We just had this great weekend being around other really sharp, super neat Young Life staff people. I was not on staff. My buddy Doug was. And we'd get in a car, and it would take no longer than 5 minutes. We'd be in the car like, man, Jim is so good at this. Rob is so good at this. Joel is so good at this. We would go through the six guys, how great they, and like 10 minutes later, we're both so discouraged. Man, they're all that in all these categories. I suck. People don't know. So left to ourselves, we just get discouraged. It's the default. When I did junior high youth ministry, they said that, I mean, this is 20, 30 years ago. It's probably changed radically now. It's even worse. But they said a junior high kid back then heard 14 negative comments a day for every one positive. And I just think what we've got to do, we're all dealing with it. You know, I think I might have told you, Jonathan, Chick-fil-A did two videos. They're both on YouTube over about a 6 or 7 year stretch. They did two where it was a pop-up video thing like VH1 used to do. And it would show a person at Chick-fil-A, can't remember if it was an employee or a customer, walking through, and everybody they passed, it'd have a pop-up like what's going on in their lives or what they just went through. It's beautiful. Go to Chick-fil-A, YouTube on Chick-fil-A. I forgot what it's called. Everybody has a story. And everybody does. Everybody's going through something. We're all in a storm, coming out of one or going into one. And I think not being afraid to even say to someone, like I said it today, I'm telling people, like, don't underestimate prayer. You can be praying for me right now as I'm discouraged. I need prayer. And oh, by the way, if the Lord gives you a word from me that's specific to me as you seek him for me, man, I want to hear it. I'll take the encouragement. But don't just encourage to encourage. Like, if the Lord said something to you, say, hey, tell Jeff this, or encourage Jeff with this, or here's a scripture, here's whatever. Man, I want it. You know, when people say, hey, can I pray for you? I said, hey, I'm at home right now. Come on over, lay your hands on me, whatever. Not to be goofy when I say that, but I mean that. So we're all being, you know, Truett Cathy, Chick-fil-A. He said, how do you know if someone needs encouraged? You guys know the answer to that?
They're breathing.
They're breathing. Everybody needs encouraged. Hey, David, has anybody ever said to you, have you ever said to anybody, quit? I've been encouraged too much today. You don't need encouragement anymore.
Never happened to me.
Has it happened to you, Jonathan?
No.
Never happened to me. I went through the Emmaus Walk, and I hope I'm not spoiling anything. I went through the Emmaus Walk a number of years ago, and there's this two things they do. They do this letter thing, and I won't get into the details about that. They also have this line you go through, and people tell you they love you. I get to the end, and I'm like, hey, can I go through again? I loved hearing random people tell me they love me, and it felt somehow very genuine. So you can't get enough of those kind of things, but part of it is just acknowledging, like, hey, I need it. It's the mark to you and three others carry somebody to Jesus. Sometimes you got to be carried. So acknowledge what you need.
Yeah, yeah. Jeff, what do you see as like the big difference maker that helps guys or just anybody to be able to make that shift from just the trap of like, oh, I don't actually need that. I don't feel like I should acknowledge that I actually need that encouragement to being as open as you're talking about and saying, hey, I really could use some encouragement. I could use some prayer. What's the way to like bridge that gap if somebody is like, I think that I want that, but I don't know how to get there?
I think it's modeling it. And I think it's really, you know, Aubrey Sampson, who I like a lot. She's a pastor and author. I've been reading her book with Where I Am Right Now called What You Find in the Dark. And she uses a phrase, and I'm sure she didn't coin it, but it's a great phrase. Words create worlds. And they really do. You know, you think of Toby Mac, Ryan Stevenson, they had the classic song Speak Life. Why did it speak to people so much? Because it's speak life. We want life spoken into us. And I think if we model it, like, so when we do our one retreat every year, it's nothing hidden. Everybody knows about it now. The last day, the last thing we do is we go around and I'll have a football or maybe it's a hoodie and it's wadded up or a pair of socks. You throw it to somebody, you encourage them, and you have to speak to them. You could speak about something you learned on that retreat, how you see Jesus in them, a story if you've known each other for a long time, but you speak directly to them. Specific, not in a third person. So I think it's modeling it and create environments where it's going to happen. Because then once people see it, they tend to do it. You know, like if I used to go in my youth ministry days, there's a place where there was a little bit of a waterfall and we'd jump off into this, you know, creek. And, you know, first time you do it, it's a little scary. And, you know, you're doing the whole 1, 2, 3, we'll go at the same time. 1, 2, 3, neither one of you went. 1, 2, neither one of you went. And then finally you kind of do, or one goes and the other one doesn't, and then the other person jumps. When you encourage people and you build, speak life into them, all that, speak God's word over them, encourage them with how you see Christ in them, it just happens. But you have to create a culture where it's going to happen. You know, what's the famous, I'm forgetting his name, the business guy that culture eats strategy every day for Peter Drucker, culture eats strategy every day for lunch. It's true with encouragement. If you demonstrate it, you do it to people, you look for ways to encourage them. I, one of the things I like to do every time I go to a restaurant or coffee shop, I'm going to find a way to encourage the person who waited on me. I have failed sometimes, David. My daughter would tell you she has seen me fail. And one time at an aquarium, she looked at me like, if that guy thinks you're a Christian, he ain't thinking too highly of Jesus right now. But more times than not, I get it right.
You said aquarium. I was sure you would have said an airport. That would have been my, yeah. So there's that encouragement piece, that ability to encourage others, but also to listen and to tell others. This retreat that I go to is unique in that the kind of heart of it is everybody gets 15 minutes to share their story. And then the other people there get 15 minutes to ask questions, but nobody's allowed to give advice. And the leader of this group that put this together had this quote he found, and I'm going to kind of end and summarize because I think it cuts to some of the stuff that we're talking about here. And he says, an important part of how people, I was looking for the quote here and I found it. It's from The Anatomy of the Soul by Kurt Thompson.
Wright State grad, by the way. He went to school where I went to school. Go Kurt Thompson, Wright State Raider.
So you have some background here. So An important part of how people change, not just their experience, but also their brains, is through the process of telling their stories to an empathetic listener. When a person tells her story, and is truly or his story, and is truly heard and understood, both he and the listener undergo actual changes in their brain circuitry. They feel a greater sense of emotional and relational connection, decreased anxiety, and greater awareness of and compassion for others' suffering. Using the language of neuroscience, Dr. Siegel labeled the change increased integration. I thought that was fascinating from the standpoint that, you know, the very construction of the way God made us is altered and improved by the act of listening to somebody else, which, you know, I mean, as Christians, we would say our reality is defined by relationship, as evidenced by the fact that we follow a triune God. And, you know, to explain that is not necessarily possible for us because it's a great mystery, but yet that reality is still with us. And as I've listened to you, you know, I think the heart of what you've been saying in a lot of these things, Jeff, is that there is something sacred and something essential to being able to connect with others, and in the process realize you're not alone, you're not unique, that others are there too, and that there are two things here. There's a chance for you to carry and to be carried, both of which wind up being essential. And yeah, I think that's something that I think anybody listens to it goes, yeah, that makes sense. And yet, it is the first thing that we jettison when things aren't going well.
Well, it's Timothy, Paul, Barnabas. I mean, think about that. You want to, you know, I like to ask a question to people sometimes, and we if we would have longer, I bet we might have got into it, Jonathan, when we talked before. It's who's pouring into you, who are you pouring into, and who are you walking side by side with? Because, you know, when I meet a high-level leader, and I'm talking about someone with a platform, author, big-time pastor, supposedly, and again, all that stuff doesn't really matter to God. But when I was thinking about John Maxwell today, you know, to ask a guy like John Maxwell, who pours into you? Now, the ironic thing is, if you ask John Maxwell, I'm pretty confident he's got an answer.
I was thinking the same thing, yeah.
You know what's funny? People will say to me sometimes when I ask that question, they'll be like, my wife. And my heart just cringes because I'm like, I hope that means you got a great relationship with your wife. But man, if you're making your main source of encouragement, I mean, pouring into, as a man, your wife, I don't think that's how God created it. Clearly, it's intimacy with God. It's Holy Spirit. It's, you know, drawing near. It's Colossians 3:3-4. But we need people pouring into us. And, you know, we got to know where to get it. I used to think it was found in one person. Now I understand I need multiple people in different specialty areas. But when you ask people if they don't have an answer to that question, or if it's a pastor and they say my church, I'm like, oh no, that I don't want to beat them up over it. But I'm like, there's no way that's good.
Yeah, or that it will last because they can be fickle things, you know, the way the church is run. So, well, Jeff, thank you. I appreciate you sharing with us. I appreciate the work that you've done. I believe that this is the reality. You presented this in terms of a great blessing for your opportunity to work with and do the gathering and all those things, and I'm sure that's true. I also have done some full-time ministry from time to time, and I realize there's another side of that, which is, you know, there's a putting in and a sacrifice and a strain and an exhaustion that comes with that as well. And so, yeah, maybe to take your own advice, give me a chance to encourage you and say thank you for what you've done, for the framework work that you've created, for some really great lessons that you've obviously internalized and have been able to share. And yeah, that last part about modeling, you know, as somebody who has people that pour into you, but then that enables you to pour into others. That's not a small thing. And even just modeling that in the circles that you're in has an impact probably far beyond what you can see or will ever imagine. So thanks for sharing that with us and broadening the circle that way. We really appreciate your time and appreciate you being here.
It was a joy. It was a lot of fun to be on here with you guys. David, I'm glad you piped in. If you wouldn't have, I think we would have missed something. So I'm glad you inserted yourself and it wasn't just me and Jonathan.
Most listeners know that David's actually the smart one in this, Jeff, so that's not surprising.
He has got the looks, so. He gets the smarts, right?
That's right. Yeah, and he also got the voice, so I had to get something somewhere. So
there you go.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, if you are discouraged, I hope that was helpful. If you're not discouraged, I think he said something along the lines of, you know, you're either going to be or you're about to move into it. He had a different, you know, if you're not in the storm, you're about to enter the storm. And that's true. Their discouragement is a unique human malady. And it's one that our enemy uses against us quite a bit. And so there's lots of things to be taken from our conversation with Jeff, but maybe the one that I might hold up and lift up to you is to pay attention to that discouragement aspect, because you're going to struggle with it. it breeds and multiplies in isolation, and it can often be completely vanquished in community. And that alone is just worth noting and worth observing.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that we here at Unbound have gotten a firsthand experience with that with young people who a lot of them will end up coming and enrolling in our programs without having really had a real community experience before, and then coming in and finding just how transformative and encouraging that it can be. And we've heard some really incredible testimonies from quite a few students who have talked about just how meaningful it's been. I think from our alumni, if you ask pretty much any of them, the number one thing that they will say when, if you ask them, what's your favorite part about being in Unbound, is that they're just like, oh, there's just such an encouragement in the community. And while obviously we're super proud of that and grateful for that in Unbound, I don't think that is an Unbound exclusive thing either. I think that's something that is needed in all spheres at all ages, and is something that I don't think that we could possibly stress enough.
Well, I think that's certainly true, and you should note that. I might also add something else here as we're getting ready to wrap this episode up, and that is just a kind of a nod towards that community at Unbound. I was talking to one of our alumni actually last night, had dinner with him, and he said something along the lines of community is hard to sell, meaning it's hard to present, it's hard to explain. And I think that's true. And he also said, and it's hard for people to do new things. And that's interesting because Unbound is a new thing. It's different from what a lot of people are expecting when it comes to educational programs. And a big part of the benefit of it is the community. Now, we have lots of benefits in terms of classes and education and training and all those kinds of things. But to David's point, when you ask students, communities, what they talk about, and it's worth noting why that is. There's something uniquely powerful when you put people together in a place that share some of the same values and some of the same vision, and then you put them in places where they get to experience things together, and that you challenge them and have them overcome those challenges together. Now, that's not unique. That's universal. And if you look at any kind of human endeavor where people are tightly bonded and tightly connected, and they look back on that and say, that was a formative part of my life, those elements are present. And it's worth noting that those elements are in present and Unbound, and they're very specifically and deliberately. In other words, they're engineered into the program. We build those, we create those experiences, we recruit people with same values and with the same values and vision. We create challenges for people to experience together so that that bonding occurs. And when that bonding does occur, two things happen. One, the lessons, the marketable skills, the ability to make decisions, figure out what's next, those things become really locked in a really powerful way. And deep relationships form that end up surpassing and outlasting the actual educational experience, the time in Unbound. If that sounds interesting to you, go to beunbound.us and learn more about our programs, particularly our flagship Ascend program. We're in the middle of our recruiting season. We're looking for a class of people who share our visions and values, who are willing to be challenged and are looking for the kinds of benefits that come from that deep-seated and deep-rooted kinds of community experiences. And if that looks like it's interesting to you, go to the website, check us out, give us a call so we can explain it in more detail, and perhaps we'll see you in Michigan this summer. Until next time, be Unbound.